What did happen? Okay. See, we did crash. It was on this crazy island. And we waited for rescue, and there wasn't a rescue. And then there was a smoke monster. And then there were other people on the island. We called them the others. And they started attacking us. And we found some hatches, and there was a button you had to push every 180 minutes, or... Well, I was never really clear on that. But the others didn't have anything to do with the hatches. That was the Dharma Initiative. They were all dead. The others killed them. And now they're trying to kill us. And then we teamed up with the others because some worse people were coming on a freighter. Desmond's girlfriend's father sent them to kill us. So we stole their helicopter, and we flew it to their freighter, but it blew up. And we couldn't go back to the island because it disappeared. So then we crashed in the ocean, and we floated there for a while until a boat came and picked us up. And by then, there were six of us. That part was true.
I came on a plane.
What plane?
A Jira Flight 316. And that's how I returned to the island.
So, why him?
What was it that was so wrong with me? What about me?
What about you?
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast for Season 6, Episode 6, Sundown. This week, I have a question for you. What's a better gift for young children from Australia than a destructive boomerang? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and Saeed, you should have brought him a stuffed koala, but not a real koala because they're assholes.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I would bring Saeed's niece and nephew some Tim Tams from Australia.
And I'm Neil Miller, and because I'm always going to be destined to be sort of a chaos uncle, if I ever end up having nephews and nieces, I would probably bring one of those giant spiders that they have in Australia.
What?
And be like, I brought you a pet.
So much worse than a boomerang. What are you thinking?
I know.
You went in the other direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Saeed didn't go far enough with his gift.
This is like, you don't have a secret crush on your brother's wife. You absolutely hate your brother's
right.
wife.
Right, like he resents...
children's spiders.
He deeply resents Nadia for choosing his brother.
I smuggled this through customs when a very nice Korean couple was stopped and distracted the people. Yeah. The spiders!
He's very good. He can get stuff through customs.
Yeah, that's true. Well, is he very good, or is he inherently evil at his core? Yeah, we have to discuss that, because it's a Saeed episode. But, if this is your first time joining us, welcome! The podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us, or visiting the island and flashing sideways for the very first time, because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. And then there's a second section we call The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers, discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. If you look at your podcasting device where this is playing right now, you will see time codes for both of those sections. If you want to skip around, if you want to revisit, you do you. For the final season of Lost, we've shifted to releasing the podcast on Saturday evening in the United States after our group live watch in our Storm Slack. How do you join those live watches with us, you ask? You go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you'll find ways to subscribe for us for a monthly fee, and depending on what level you choose, you get more and more bonus content. And when you subscribe for the very first time, if you're just joining us as a Patreon, you will get instant access. I'm so excited. Instant access to our previous years of bonus content, which include extra interview bits, bonus podcasts, and various oddities. There's even bonus podcasts that come with watch-long elements, including something like Feels Like the First Time. What's that, Joanna?
Oh, hey, hi. That's a little side podcast that I do with our friend Kristen Russo, the Buffering Podcast, a little crossover event. I already talked about this last week, what we're doing this month, so I won't bore you, but yeah, we're doing drag films. New episode's going to drop this week. Will have already dropped by the time you're listening to this, so... There is that. That's also not the only way that you can spend more time with us. You can hang out in our Patreon-supported Slack, where we do live watches of the show every Saturday. But next weekend, Neil will be back in the chair with Dr. Linus. I wonder who that episode is about. So that's some stuff we do in our Slack, as well as, you know, we've got chat rooms about Loki and a bunch of other stuff, so you can come hang out with folks and talk about all that stuff. You can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We got a bunch of good emails this week. You can visit our website, stormpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter @stormpodcast, or you can leave us a review. So let me start with we've got a little sweet little review, 5 stars from a Brit in the Netherlands, from the Netherlands. A fine podcast with 3 fine humans. Found this podcast originally through Game of Thrones. The passion, knowledge, and camaraderie of the host is so entertaining that I kept listening despite having never seen the TV show Lost. Now I'm hooked and a big fan of their work. So thank you to this British person who lives in the Netherlands. We appreciate you.
Oh, it sounds like they're hooked on Lost. So also win. Win for Lost.
And then we got a couple emails here, and then a couple emails for the Storm section as well. So this one's a little long, but I think it's worth it. And it's about last week's episode, The Lighthouse. All right. This is from Bertrand, who writes, "First of all, I just want to emphasize how much our fearless leaders nailed the discussion and analysis of Lighthouse." That's right. It's called Lighthouse. No, the Jack's emotional baggage, his signs of self-awareness, and his manifestation of his inner child. Just great stuff. Thank you so much for all of your insights. I merely want to add a small complimentary layer that pertains to Christian's assertion that Jack doesn't have what it takes. The thing is, if you go back and watch that scene, Christian is actually offering some reasonable advice and proving that he understands something that his son already struggles with. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving Christian a get out of bad dad jail free card. Jack's trauma is real. His dad's boozy delivery of the line, "You don't have what it takes," is hurtful. In addition to the general booziness and haunting Ice Cube chimes, Christian's demeanor is cold, and he suggests that he, unlike Jack, does have what it takes. Really, though, Christian is coming home after a day where he lost a young boy on the operating table. He claims to have what it takes because he was able to act without the pressure of a hero complex, wash his hands, and come home like any normal, even though he failed earlier in the day. His full statement to Jack is, "Don't choose, Jack. Don't decide. You don't want to be a hero. You don't want to try to save everyone, because when you fail, you just don't have what it takes." To me, even though he failed the delivery, Christian is seeing his young son pretty clearly. He isn't saying that Jack isn't smart or talented or whatever enough. He is saying that Jack's obsession with solving every problem, even as a kid, will make him feel like a failure and prevent him from thinking clearly in the moment. That is Jack in a nutshell. I don't think Christian, broken as he is, wants this for his son. But intentions don't matter. Impact matters. It's very easy to make the wrong impact on a kid, and it's even easier for adults to reveal their own flaws when they try to instruct their children. Christian traumatized Jack. I don't contest that fact. So why does Christian's intent matter here? Simply because on island, Jack would probably want to hug his dad if he could hear that same speech in the present as a broken man whose hero complex has hurt the people that he loves. It's the same story in the Sideways world. We learn that Jack's support / excitement for David's piano playing came through as nothing more than lofty, obsessive, painful expectation. It made David afraid of his own father. We are left with yet another parallel to the early days of Lost. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to read this message. Bertrand. I loved this analysis a lot. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's a good episode, because I think a lot of times Lost is either too on the nose with its echoes, either to previous parts of the series or to the arch. They lean a little bit on the side of this being a television show and television shows having to be for a widest possible audience, aka the Sawyer's ring of it all. But I do think that Lighthouse has all of these layers and supports all of this contextual analysis, which just kind of shows what a good season 6 episode it is.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to Bertrand for reminding us that last week's episode was so good as we prepare to talk about this week's episode.
Okay.
It's good. So I love that for us. Just one more moment of peace.
All right. Casey wrote in with something that actually does help unlock something about this episode for me, something that I have been struggling with probably since I first saw it many years ago. Casey writes, "Hey guys, love the show. Hope I didn't miss this before you recorded the Lighthouse episode." Casey did, but that's okay. I got into Lost in high school having missed the chance to start watching when it initially aired because, and stop me, you've heard this one, I was 11 at the time.
Oh, God. Oh, how is everyone's person 11. That listens to our podcast the same age and it was that? Oh, man.
time to watch Lost.
This podcast does a spectacular job of both looking at the series through a contemporary lens while reminding me of how it all felt at the height of my obsession in 2009, 2010. I love the discussion you had a couple weeks ago about the sickness. It's perhaps Lost's most clear example where whatever ideas they had when they introduced the mystery does not synchronize with where they finally decided to take it. But when you were talking about how did Claire get claimed, there was a piece that got overlooked. Claire didn't just start acting strange and wander off in the night, much like Saeed. Claire didn't just start acting strange and wander off into the night. Period. Much like Saeed, she survived something she should not have survived, namely the destruction of her house in Dharmaville. But when Sawyer finds her, she's not only alive, but barely has a scratch on her. She asks for Charlie, which he assumes was her being out of it. I always took that as a hint that she actually did pass over in the same way Saeed did, if only for a moment, and then came back, with the same darkness growing inside, corrupting her. While on the whole, the infection is one of the more frustrating parts of the series mythos, this has always struck me as consistent, at least back in the back half of the show. Much like Pet Sematary, surviving, coming back, from what should have killed you, but come back wrong. Just wanted to give a possible explanation. This is a great podcast, but a great series, and love everything you guys do, Casey. I like this really unlocks something for me, because it's always been frustrating for me to try to connect what happened with Claire, what happened to Saeed, and the idea that Claire died for a little bit after her bowels blew up.
She blew up.
Works for me.
Wow.
But she got better.
So, I mean, the sickness is just another way in which the timeline is sort of correcting itself. You know, it's just a different version of what happened to Charlie, ultimately.
I mean, essentially that they're like kind of zombies that the man in black like raised from the dead to claim as his own. I mean, that works for the French people too, because they definitely seem like they died down that temple hole. So like, you know, Robert came back mal. You know what I mean? Like that all makes sense to me.
Everybody came back. Like, wolf brain.
I feel peace for the first time in like a decade. Thank you for that email, Casey.
That is good.
All right, and then I think that's it for me. So let's take a quick break before we find out what happened on Lost this week.
Today's episode, we are welcoming back a returning sponsor to the show, IP Vanish. So, what is IP Vanish? IP Vanish is a virtual private network, a VPN for short. A VPN is a super important tool that helps you safely browse the internet. You can use a VPN on your computers, tablets, phone, even things like your Fire Stick when you're streaming media. And when you use a VPN, all of your data is encrypted. What you're reading, what you're searching, what you're watching, whatever it is you're doing.
That's important because what you're doing on the internet is no one else's business but yours. IPVanish helps you remain anonymous and secure on the internet. For listeners of this show, IPVanish is offering an incredible 65% off, just $3.49 for the first month or $31.49 for the year. Here's everything you get with IPVanish. Anonymous IP addresses. This means your personal IP address can't be tracked by anyone on the web. Circumvent any online censorship. IPVanish has more than 1,500 servers in 70 plus locations. Get protection when you're using public Wi-Fi. Remember, with IPVanish, all of your data is encrypted, so no one can snoop on what you're doing. And 24/7 support. You could email them, chat with them, even call them. They're there to help.
So go to IPVanish.com/storm, claim 65% savings. They have plans starting at just $3.49 or $31.49 for the entire year. This is the time to sign up. With our discount and their current promotional offerings, you can get VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IPVanish is the best of the best, even rated 4.7 out of 5 on Trustpilot, and that's with more than 6,000 reviews. Show these guys some love. They're repeat sponsors. Remember, it's IPVanish.com/storm to get the deal and start protecting yourself online. Hey, Neil, what happened this week on Lost?
Oh, quite a few things happened. So glad that you asked. This episode, Sundown, was written by Paul Zbyszewski and Graham Rowland and directed by Bobby Roth. It aired on March 2nd, 2010, and it takes place on day 7 following the arrival of Ajira Flight 316 on the island. On the aforementioned island, Saeed goes looking for some answers and ultimately gets his ass beat by Dogen, who then banishes him from the temple. But before he can leave, Claire shows up to deliver a message from her friend, prompting Dogen to imprison her and give Saeed a mission to go and kill the man in black. Out in the jungle, Saeed meets up with Flock, immediately stabs him, and then after that doesn't work, sits down to have a conversation with him. The man in black then convinces Saeed to head back to the temple and deliver an even bigger warning that everyone needs to leave by sundown. See, there's the episode title. Elsewhere in the temple, Kate has returned and discovers that Claire is back and ultimately falls down a hole in her attempt to rescue Claire. Elsewhere in the Flash Sideways, Saeed goes to meet Nadia, who, in this version of the world, is married to his brother with a couple of kids. And after his brother is beaten up by some debt collectors, Uncle Saeed jumps into action, and investigating his brother's situation leads to a confrontation with none other than Martin Kimi, who is there with his good old buddy Omar. It's been a while since we've seen them. After shooting Kimi, Saeed finds Jin in a freezer. Amazing. The whole thing ends back at the temple, where old Clickety-Clack shows up to come through on his promise to wipe out the others. He ultimately kills everyone except for our faves, Kate, Claire, and Saeed, and then rolls right up into the temple with his own crew. That appears to be growing. There's just a lot of people in his entourage now. A fun fact about this episode, with his extremely brief appearance in The Flash Sideways, Matthew Fox becomes the first cast member to appear in 100 episodes of Lost. He will not be the last, I guess, not to spoil anything.
There's got to be some people who are close.
Right? We'll do the math later. This week's calm question, if you're on the island and you've been chilling out at the temple, maybe playing tic-tac-toe, maybe picking some flowers, who knows? If Saeed showed up and told you to leave by sundown, what would you do? And let's start this week with Joanna. Are you exiting the temple toot sweet?
Toot sweet? Yeah. Well, yeah. Can I point of order, which is like, he doesn't kill everyone in the temple, right? He kills everyone who stays in the temple. And the crowd that he rolls up with are all the people that that left. And we know that because Cindy and the kids left and are now part of Locke's entourage. And as Cindy goes, she survived this long, right?
Shout out to Cindy's survival skills.
Yeah. So as Cindy goes, so goes my nation. I follow Cindy. Whatever she does, that's what I do.
Dave, do you stay to find out what happens?
I'm going to say that I'm going to get out of the temple the first time someone tells me I could get out of the temple and just run away. I don't want to join either of these parties. Mm. Both of these parties seem like bad times at the El Royale.
Yeah, I feel like I would have left the temple long ago already. And not that I would be able to hang out with Sawyer, because you got to let him have his space. But I would be living in one of the Dharmaville cabins that are like kind of down the street from Sawyer. You know, don't get too close, but I also would want like a shower and indoor plumbing. I don't know if there's like a shower. I mean, I think the showers at Dharmaville still work. I don't think there are showers at the temple, which yet another reason to dislike the accommodations.
They probably have like sun showers, you know what I mean? Like, but also,
or like they have another spring that's just for bathing, where the water is equally not great.
But also, you have to like share it with Lennon, who never wears shoes, and like I feel like he's the guy in the college dorm that like gives everyone like some sort of foot disease. So yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Last week, Claire's like the only thing you had to worry about is infection, and I was like, well, what we've learned with Jack's appendix is you only have to worry about infection if the island's mad at you. But that doesn't mean you have to give up personal hygiene, temple others.
Mm-hmm.
Like they chose those outfits. This is the 2000s. This is the modern day. Yeah, we're not in the 70s
like,
anymore.
Lennon's out here walking through the food court in his bare feet. It's gross. I would have peaced out a long time ago.
When he like slip slaps his little bare feet all up to the spring to die, I was like, this is your last day as a barefoot man, Lennon. I'm done with you. I'm done with you and your bare feet. No. Anyway, he's dead.
Done with you slip slapping around.
Yeah, your bare feet now. And your IKEA bookshelf. Get out of here.
Something else, another, I guess not a point of order, but something that I think is important, but we might just yada yada over because we're kind of happy it happens. Dogen gets murdered mm-hmm. by Saeed, who apparently he was the person that was keeping Flock outside of the temple, which we get a backstory, a little bit of backstory with the baseball and his son, and he was made a promise by Jacob that his son would live, but he would never get to see him again, like asshole God promise, in order to come and protect the sacred temple, I would assume. So Joanna put in the notes, this seems like bad security, but I want to see the island organizational chart again, because Jacob is like seems to be collecting people for weird reasons. We've seen him collect Alana. We know that Richard seems to know where he stays, but doesn't know anything about candidates. Mm-hmm. Ben said he was serving Jacob, but had apparently never met him. And now we have Dogen, who's been running this whole secondary other society, and he's apparently like some sort of shield-generating samurai that also needs ash circles. I'm very confused.
Like, why Dogen? Powers. Like, why Dogen? And, mm-hmm. like, and this is such an awful, shitty... Like, Jacob's an asshole. Like, you know what I mean? And it is interesting that Dogen draws the line between the deal he's offered by Jacob and the seeming promise that Smokey makes Saeed that, like, Nadia will live again. And my question, like, so here's technically what Dogen says. He says, every Friday I picked up my son from baseball. He was 12. The accident was very bad. I survived, but my son, ... And then in the hospital, a man came to me, a man I had never met, and he told me that he could save my son's life. So, like, did his son die? Like, that's the implication, that his son died and Jacob resurrected him? So Jacob has the ability to bring, you know, Osaka businessmen's kids back from the dead if he wants them to come be a temple employee?
Off the island?
Off the island?
On top of all that?
Well, that's very Locke-y, right? Assuming he didn't just wake Locke up after Locke fell
out of the building. That's true. Unless Jacob is, like, secretly a better doctor than Jack. And is like, I can do the surgery. I can help this kid.
And I
well,
mean, like,
it's not better if you're giving him ultimatums. Like, Jack might be like, if I fix you, maybe you could marry me, which is problematic in its own way. But it's not like you have to marry me if I fix you.
I married her. And also, so, like, the implication here is that Dogen was drinking. And, like, it was a drunk drive. Like, he's responsible for his son's death. So this, his gig at the temple is, like, penance for that. Mm-hmm. But like also I just think he's shitty at his job, ? Like I wouldn't hire Dogen to run my mystery temple.
Yeah. Also he pins a lot of hopes here at the end on being able to manipulate Saeed.
But is that what he's doing? I don't know. We're gonna talk about it more in the storm, but I don't know what we're meant to think, whether or not Dogen is actually like
I like how you phrased that. I also don't know what we're meant to think. Mm. I think, at the way this episode is like structured, that yes. But I think that this episode plays very poorly because we enter the episode wanting to be on Saeed's side, and Island Saeed doesn't do anything worthy of us being on his side for very little motivation.
Very little. This is a terrible episode. This is a terrible turn of the plot. I mean, I don't mind, like, I'm glad Martin Kimi's here, honestly. Like, that's my favorite part of the episode.
The sideways isn't bad. The sideways has, like, I would have rather seen an hour of that storyline playing out.
Yeah.
Where there's both Nadia, who's in a relationship that she was pushed into with the brother, and the brother has made, like, a bad business investment. And surprisingly, Nadia's like, he got himself into this mess, like, don't help him. That's all super interesting. Island stuff, not super interesting. And I don't know why. It's like I feel like Saeed has some actions. He attempts to kill Smokey, then he comes back and kills Dogen, presumably to let Smokey into the temple. But like in between those are scenes, I guess, where people are just obliquely telling other people things that we already know.
Well, I think two things. Number one, I hate this turn for Saeed. Full stop.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that this is an idea that they had and they ran with it. I hate it. But the backup is that I think they were trying to like preserve. It's exactly sort of one of the things that I think you hate, Dave. They're trying to like preserve the surprise because like in theory, if you're just watching this for the first time and you're still, you don't know yet what they're about, how they're about to character assassinate Saeed, you think maybe he comes back to the temple and he's not gonna murder a bunch of people.
Sure.
So they can't show you the end of his conversation with Locke, like the thing that really pushed him to turn, because they want you to not know whether or not he has, so that it's a surprise when he goes after Dogen and goes after Lennon. But like, I hate that because this turn is so bad that I really, really, really need to see the work done to put our guy Saeed on that path.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see it. I didn't get to see it for Claire either. She's just weird in a cabin. You know what I mean? And
it's then just all like, sudden, yada, yada, yeah. yada, infection.
Yeah. And these are like, Claire is bad enough, but Saeed is the character that we've just like really been with for a long, and to do this to him right at the end, I'm mad about it.
Yeah. I mean,
I still think that this would have all played better if there was some sort of outwardly physical sign of like possession or taintedness or whatnot. Not this like hook them up, you know, run some sort of oblique test, but just like their eyes turn red or something, so we as the audience could be like, this happened now,
right?
And you could just like switch it on and switch it off, and then like it would be so much better. But you're right in that this is an episode that has a twist on Island. It gets us out of the temple, which is something that I wanted to happen, so I'm not like too worried about that. But I think it's couched in another battle for Saeed's soul, which I think is unfair to the character, because I think the reality is, you know, he's been polluted by a supernatural force. Like, he stabs Flock in the chest and he pulls it out. Like, obviously we're in some sort of like fantasy thing. So I'm much more willing to forgive actual zombie Saeed than this person I'm told is corrupted, but still appears to just be doing things that Saeed's done. Like, he shot a kid last season. Like, slitting Dogen's throat isn't that far out, except there is no more hope for me, seems like. Just in case we, the audience, were wondering, there's no time left for Saeed. Let's make sure to put that flag on there. It's all just very frustrating, and not, it's like, there isn't a lot of tension. There's tension when Saeed is supposed to go and stab the smoke monster before he says anything, so you're like, okay, cool. But that's the beginning of the scene. The rest of the scene doesn't have any tension. It just has like confusion. And then when he comes back into the temple, the tension is, you know, like, what's gonna happen at sundown? But they keep like putting him in well-lit places where I don't even know what the ticking clock is. It's just, it's so like, there's a point in this episode where I'm like, well, like, we've seen the man in black. We've seen him send Claire in there. We've seen Saeed come back. Like, obviously, Sawyer is the one who's going to be, like, the big bad. Like, they're going to throw Berserker Sawyer at these people. But nope. Just none of it makes any sense. I don't know what this team is. I don't know what we're fighting at the temple. And I think we're out of it.
It's also really weird to me. I mean, I know that this is, like, infected Saeed, I guess, question mark. But, like, it's weird to me that Claire shows up. Saeed hasn't seen Claire in a really long time. And he, like, doesn't really react. And then, like, later he asks about Claire. But I'm like, why didn't you say, oh my god, Claire's here? Like, I don't know. I think this is a bad episode of Lost, I guess, is full stop.
Speaking of Claire, She is here. And Neil, what does Claire have to do in this episode?
I mean, basically just get captured, right?
That's true. And like, be ominous in a hole.
Right, she shows up and she's like, hey, Dogen, my dude wants to talk to you, my best friend.
I mean, okay, shout out to Emily Draven. I love her delivery of, like, you know who.
Right.
Like, that was a good little evil line read.
But yeah, like, her, again, we talked about this either last week or the week before. Like, slightly sinister Claire is sort of Emily DeRaven's sweet spot, especially in the mess of what they do to her character here in this season. But yeah, I mean, she just shows up to get captured, and it's good because she's ultimately there when Kate shows up, because, you know, Claire is her mission now. You know, she's happy for Jack. She hopes Jack finds what he's looking for. She's also seems to be perfectly fine not bothering Sawyer anymore. And so, you know, good for her. But yeah, Claire, not a whole lot going on here.
Well, I will say, if we're looking for tension in this episode, there is a good little bit of tension when we have already seen Claire say, like, Jin, I'm really glad you told me you were lying about Kate, because if she took my baby, I'd kill her, right? And then we have Kate, who is unaware of that conversation, being like, no, Claire, don't worry, I have your baby. And then we get to see Claire, like, process that information and still kind of keep Kate close to her. And that, so there's a little bit of fun tension there around that.
Sure.
Well, and I think because Kate is attached to Claire, and Claire's the oldest member that we know about on Team Smokey at this point, that at the end, like, Locke sees her walk out of the temple, he's like, oh, all right.
Yes.
And now she's on the Smoke Monster team.
Like, she's grudgingly following them. And, like, also, P.S., shout out to Vandeline Lily, who hiked her sleeves up to give us a gun show on the way. She grabs a gun and then flashes her guns as she walks out of the temple. It's a great look for her. But, like, Locke's look at Kate, because I think he knows she's not, that she's just here for Claire. I think he knows she's a dangerous person to have on the team right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his look at her.
Well, she has not been infected. She's the only one.
Right. And but he has Sawyer too, but Sawyer, I think he feels like is in a place where he can manipulate. And I think he's like, I don't know what leverage I have over Kate right now, except for having Claire, you know?
She's the one that's following him that hasn't made the choice to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's following Claire.
Yeah. But is still physically there, you know, which, you know, that might bring her in contact with Sawyer again. Won't she be happy? Well, she'll get to see Claire and Sawyer. Sure, it's on the bad guys team, but
well, that's a moment I also really love in this episode, is when, like, Kate comes back and Miles like, so he kicked you to the curb, right? I knew that would happen. I would have gone after him, but I know my boyfriend better than you know him, so didn't work out for you, did it?
We spent 3 years in the 70s together. He was my boss.
Uh-huh.
I would almost be saying something like, with Jacob's shitty Dogen deal and the Smoke Monsters here, you know, once again giving people seemingly a choice, that maybe we don't know who the bad guys are, but at sundown, a giant pillar of smoke massacres a whole bunch of people inside the temple. That seems like...
That seems pretty antagonist-y.
Yeah, yeah.
From
I think it's the bad guy. I think it's the bad guy team.
But RIP, rest in pieces, the temple. I fucking hated you. Yeah. Bye.
I mean, that's really the best thing to come out of this episode, is that the temple... I mean, as far as we know... The temple storyline is dead with Dogen.
I will say this. I don't know this for a fact, but this smacks to me of we've introduced a thing that we don't know what to do with it, so we're just going to wipe it off the map. It's not the first time that Lost has done it, and it is not going to be the last time it does it this season. In fact, there are numerous examples of it this season.
It is also one of the best times that they use the character of John Locke once again to just blow up their hatch, essentially. Just be like, and we're done with this now. Get Locke in there.
It's very Dharma Purge, this, like, temple mm-hmm. massacre. But yeah, I feel like this is a real writer's, I don't know, blow it up. let's not worry about the temple anymore. We screwed up. We made it some weird, like, E-meter Scientology spot with an ambiguous rules pool, like, I don't know. So
yeah, it's like somebody in the writer's room was just like, wait a minute, should we make an organizational chart for the others? And Damon and Carlton are like, you know what, we're done with the temple, just kill all of them, just get them out of here.
This isn't working.
This isn't working. We don't know what the organizational structure is here.
We tried to get Kate out of here. She just came back. Jack sat in the courtyard for a whole hour. Like, I don't know what we're doing.
Miles has run out of games to play in the courtyard. Mm-hmm.
Miles has run out of games to play. We made the mistake of letting Hurley leave without Miles. Like, what are we doing?
What have we done?
What are we even doing here? why do we have a whole circle of Ash slash several scenes of Ash keeping him out and then not have just one cutaway shot of someone breaking the ash for him before sundown? Come on, guys.
I don't think it's the ash breaking, though. I think it's Dogen dying.
So Ash doesn't work now that Dogen was connected to the Ash?
Ash plus Dogen. Okay. Here's the formula. If Jacob is alive, then Dogen alone could keep Locke out of or Smokey out of the temple. But if Jacob dies, pour the ash plus Dogen keeps Smokey out of the temple. But once Dogen's dead, Ash alone will not help you. Because Lennon says he's the only one. I'm not saying it's a good formula. I'm just saying it's the formula the Lost Writers seem to have thought would be good to do here. Right?
It just seems weird that, like, the Ash circle that we know was also hopping around with the cabin was dependent on a character who would never go into the cabin. Just, it seems not great. But you know what? A lot of things about the mysticism of the Asian character in a place called the temple where they dress in dirty clothing doesn't feel great to me. I'm glad to be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not out of the temple yet. Because as this attack is happening, guess who shows up? But Team Alana thought we'd be safe here.
How many people, I need a chart of how many people, like, walked into the temple and to just, like, walk right back out of the temple.
Right, like, the same temple where, like, Hurley needed to get instructions from Jacob to get the secret way out last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how, everyone knows how to get into this temple.
So, Alana shows up, which is good, because we get Ben, and if you want anyone talking to evil Saeed and giving you a look that this is serious television, you want Ben to be the person on the receiving end of that line. But also, Joanna, tell me about the hieroglyph on the tile on the wall.
I guess. Alana, like, is looking for a specific tile on the wall. She doesn't need instructions written on her forearm to find it. She has memorized it. It's the Shen Ring, which is an ancient Egyptian symbol of eternity and protection. In ancient Egypt, the Shen Ring also represents dual concepts of time, the cyclical line of periodicity, and lineal time into infinity, I guess. So that's what Alana does.
Very deep.
Sun is just here to be like, where's Jin? And we're like, fuck you, writer.
Yeah, guess what? He left the temple.
Oh, I heard Sun was coming here. Gotta get Jin out of here somehow, conveniently.
Also, I have the question of where's Jin? Jin and Sawyer seem to be with the team that is doing all the killing this time, but we don't see him. So, you know what? This time, Son, where is Jin? That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that that Sawyer is currently pouring whiskey into Jin's bear trap wound that he got from Claire. that's what I like to think.
And they're going over some, like, old Dharma war stories. Be like, fuck, I remember Rosinski? God, that guy was an asshole.
Oh, we hated him. Remember when we thought Rosinski was bad? Get a load of evil Saeed. Here he comes. Brace yourself.
All right. Let's talk more about Dogen. Dogen's the newest person to tell Saeed he's intrinsically a bad person. Because apparently there's an internal scale that you could read the balance of by shocking people and touching them with hot metals. Much similar, I suppose, to the scale that we saw in the cave with the balanced rock. But apparently we feel weird about this moral binary. I mean, I know we do just because Saeed. Like, Saeed's more complicated.
I hate it.
Than a scale. Mm-hmm.
Isn't Lost? Lost is not about, I mean, I guess it is, with, like, Jacob and the Man in Black, right? This whole, like, are men inherently good or are
one
they,
is light, yeah, one is dark.
Or are they inherently bad, you know, when they're talking about humanity, when they're looking out at the ocean and stuff like that. But, like, didn't Lost start
mm-hmm.
as a show where it's, like, whatever you think about this person, the answer is much more complicated. And we're all complicated humans with, you know, stuff in our history that should allow you to have greater empathy for who we are as people. So isn't the whole premise of Lost to begin with about shades of gray? So why are we talking about black and white and moral binary in the back end here? You know? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I thought that.
Well, and that's the thing, is the choice of using Saeed like this is particularly egregious, because Saeed is a character who, throughout his arc, you know, people have been telling him, you're a killer, you're a murderer, you're a torturer. And we've been, the more we learn about Saeed, the less we feel like that is entirely true, right? I mean, it's definitely complicated. But as Joanna mentioned,
sometimes people need killing, as right. we've learned on this island. And Saeed could do it with his ankles. So why is that not something we celebrate?
But last season, he shot a kid, and we were still kind of mixed up.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the kid was Ben. So it's, yeah. I mean, this. One of my least favorite storylines is what they're doing to Saeed here in season six. There's, because
yeah,
it does. It feels like a betrayal of a lot of what they were doing really effectively with the flashbacks early in the first couple seasons, which was recontextualizing people, you know, telling yeah. us that someone's one thing and then showing us, you know, how they became that person or how that doesn't fully represent who they are. And they have done it very effectively with Saeed in the past. And then to just finally be like, no, you know what, Saeed? It is a moral binary. And because you died and we stuck you in this pool, you're bad now. Like, you're fully bad. And I don't know. It's
There are two things that I despise about the final season of Lost. And actually, the temple. Okay, three if you count the temple. But I don't. The temple's gone. It's okay. Like, let's leave it in the past.
Two things I still hate about the final season of Lost.
What happens, Saeed here, and then one more thing that's yet to come. And I will defend the end of Lost to the end of my days. But I will, when I talk about it. And neither of these things happen in the finale, I should say. And like, when I talk about it, I will always talk about these other things as well, mm-hmm. because fuck Lost. Honestly, yeah.
I mean, this is I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast. This is where Lost my mom as an audience viewer. She was like one of the biggest fans of Lost as it was airing, mm-hmm. but she was a huge number one Saeed fan. And this just, it so immediately just takes such a terrible left turn. But it's like, God, what? Why did you do that to our guy?
Do we have to change our Slack bot saying to "he was very good"?
He was.
I don't know. I like it as the Saeed Memorial Slack bot.
The Saeed Memorial Slack bot.
He used to be very good.
Oh, like that's what we want for you.
We still think he's very good.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that, you know, I think it's terrible that the writers do this to him. I'm mad at the Man in Black for trying to manipulate him and sort of seemingly convince him that, oh, maybe if you go do some more killing, I can bring, like, Nadia back or something. And it's just bad. Everyone treats Saeed poorly, and he deserved a lot better.
Well, let's use that as I guess we have some things to talk about Miles. We could loop back to Miles, because we're so good on Saeed here, and I want to latch on to that and ask you guys that maybe this is a connection to the Sideways in some way, because Nadia is back, and we were debating last week with such a good Jack episode, coming right after the Locke episode that we also really liked, that maybe this Flash Sideways is somewhere where they're supposed to face their fears and make the correct choice. But unlike those two characters who we really like as characters, Saeed, who we also really like as a character, doesn't seem to have a sideways where he has forced his fear and conquered it. At least by the end of the episode, it seems like that's also a universe where he has to be a killer and can't be with Nadia.
Mm-hmm. Unless...
He almost made, you know, like when she comes home and he's like gluing the vase together and you're like, good job, Saeed. You didn't go kill anyone. I knew you wouldn't. But then they threaten the kids, and like, what is he supposed to do? Like, you know?
Right. Maybe shooting Kimi immediately is the yeah. right choice that Saeed missed.
Definitely.
In our other timeline. Where he like should have shown up on the freighter and just killed Kimi.
I love that tall asshole. I love him so much.
And I love but that I Omar just follows him around. They're such good friends.
They're linked
in all realities.
Yeah.
The sort of Nadia thing, the Nadia promise on island being linked to Nadia appearing on the Sideways is sort of like last week's Jack looking at his childhood home, which we'd never seen, except we've seen it in the Sideways because he was visiting his mom there. These sort of like interesting connections that are existing. But also, like, I like the Saeed Sideways. Like I said before, I kind of want more of it. But what did you guys infer the background for this Saeed is? He obviously still was part of the guard and tortured people. But he's still killing a chicken for his brother? How did he push Nadia towards her? What do we think we've learned from this?
Is he still traveling the world killing people? That's the question. Because he's still traveling. Yeah. He's doing a lot of traveling, doing a lot of work stuff.
And he says that's not him anymore, and it seems like Joanna was, you know, saying there's a possibility that he could have been, like, telling the truth and had to break when they threatened the kids.
I think so. He's trying to get the red off his ledger.
Sure.
Like, that's what he's been trying to do, and I don't know how he's doing it, but, you know, yes, he still has his, like, skills set, but I don't think, because, like, traveling the world killing people was only what he did for, like, Ben after he came back from the island, right? Before that, he was, what was Saeed doing?
He was building, like, houses.
Well, no, like, in the before the oceanic flight, he was, like, being manipulated into, like, working for the FBI or whatever that was, CIA.
Oh, that's right. He was going undercover to
so that he could find Nadia.
His cousin or his friend who is a terrorist. They're planning a terrorist thing? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. I remember that one.
Yeah.
So, I feel like this isn't, like, a softer Saeed. This isn't really that much of a different Saeed, but it is a Saeed that's denying himself Nadia still, which is, I don't know, it's interesting to me in terms of the construction of this world, because we've seen people, like, have what they want, but then we've also seen Kate's basically in the same situation, Claire's basically in the same situation, and her adoptive parents have fallen out, and Saeed is now in a situation where he is being denied it, the thing that he wants, and seems to take action that actually gets them further from that.
Mm-hmm.
Are we splitting into our light and dark side teams also in the flashes?
Oh, maybe.
I mean, John's dead, so it's hard to know.
Fair enough. Also, yeah, I guess John's dead, and we liked him in his flash, but all the other characters that I mentioned that didn't rightly face their fears, I might be just misreading Kate going back for Claire again as a turning point for Always Run Kate. I don't know. It's sloppy, and sloppy things mean I have a lot of questions about rules.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's not great, but I'm still kind of rooting for them to get together, Nadia and Saeed, because
it's
clear
sucks.
That there's something there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. He carries her photo. She's been writing him letters. She wants him to be with her. Omer, like, and the kids are like, we prefer it when you're here because our dad sucks. Like, yeah, definitely the best ending.
Won't
is,
you
like,
be our dad, Uncle Saeed?
Yeah, Omer, like, goes somewhere else, and Saeed moves in with Nadia and the kids, for sure. That's his Helen dragging him off the lawn sprinklers. That's his happily ever after. He deserves it.
Kimi gets his happily ever after, and Saeed gets to step in. And it would all work out. But instead, after a very pleasant from Kimi little egg-based showdown, he shoots some folks and finds Jin in a freezer. Last saw Jin at the airport where he had a bunch of money he was trying to smuggle in. And but it looks like also Jin has been separated from Sun in this timeline. That couple cannot catch a break. All right, I think we have to loop back now to the island. We're almost done with the temple. I swear this episode is like gonna close us out in the temple. But some other things happen at the temple, mainly Miles things and some musical things. Joanna, fill me in on Miles this episode.
Yeah, well, first of all, Miles continues on his, like, the scumbag you love trajectory by mentioning that, telling Kate that Claire's back and that Claire is still hot. Listen, Miles might like a little grime under the fingernails is what we've learned about Miles and his taste for Claire. And then also, yeah, and remember that, like, Miles was, like, looking at Claire before she dropped Aaron on the leaf and disappeared in the jungle. And Sawyer's like, don't even think about it. Remember that? That was the last time we saw Miles and Claire together. Okay.
This exploded and died and came back wrong, Claire. It's still hot.
Still hot. And then Miles is the one to tell Saeed, like, you were definitely dead. So I guess we, like, better understand, like, why they kept cutting to, like, Miles' face when Saeed was dead or whatever. But, like, I still don't understand why his face is so weird. It was just like, yep, that's a dead guy. I mean, weird after he comes back, but, like, he looked at the dead body weird. And I still don't know why. But anyway, that's all. Miles is like, I've got some afterlife knowledge for you, my friend. You are D-E-D dead. So, welcome back.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Miles, the character, once again, for being tolerable, even though you have nothing to do for this stretch of episodes. Gotta love the Miles Hurley combos, because you could just throw them in. And even if they're not doing something, I'm like, all right, we could talk to Miles. That's fine.
It's sort of like Keenan on SNL. Like, you can put him in any garbage sketch, and it doesn't stick to him. He's just Keenan, and he's great. Mm-hmm. Miles is the Keenan of Lost. That's what I think.
And finally, Claire sings a little Catch a Falling Star in her pit jail that then gets echoed by the score post-massacre for a Giacchino montage. It's Catch a Falling Star. And I think that's going to bring us to our corners, unless anybody's got anything they want to add.
Yeah, no, this is the Giacchino corner. Is the orchestral arrangement of Catch a Falling Star, which, Joanna, you looked it up. This is one of, what, three?
Well, so Lostpedia says three, but it doesn't mention one that I know is true. So we're going to say four.
Okay.
Four instances in the soundtrack where, well, it doesn't mention this one. So, like, we talked about this in Trisha Tanaka is Dead, Shambhala, like they're listening to Three Dog Night, Shambhala, but then we hear a scored orchestral version of it, right? Mm-hmm. La Mer is something that we heard from Shannon back in season one, right? And then we hear the score play it. And then Juliet was listening to Petula Clark's Downtown, and then we hear it on the score in One of Us. So it's like this moment where Giacchino's taken like a song and... Only a couple times did he do this, sort of like do an arrangement, an orchestral arrangement of it. Mm-hmm. I'm smug that we know something that Lostopedia doesn't know, because that never happened.
We finally found it.
It was Catch a Falling Star. We did it. Six seasons, six episodes.
Yeah.
Excellent. Our jungle of mystery moment is, can anything kill Locke or whatever is walking around as Locke now? Because that dude got stabbed in the heart. Saeed knows how to stab people in the heart, which is in between the ribs, so you get into the actual hearty flesh. Didn't work. Can anything kill Locke now?
This reminds me, I mean, I know I keep talking about this this word corporeal as it pertains to smoke, the smoke monster, and I think I've said before that it's something that I picked up from Buffy. So I'm gonna use another Buffy word and say Locke appears to be impervious, much like the mayor in season three. Locke appears to be impervious. So there you go.
Definitely makes him more frightening. Mm-hmm. Can't kill anything. So don't make it mad. That seems to be the best course of action. The dumb elaborate artifact of the week. I missed this corner being added, but I love it. Here we go. Dogen's hiding a magical dagger in his plants. Heaven forbid he just display the dagger on an IKEA shelf or just put it in a corner. Who the fuck's going to notice? This temple, it makes no sense. The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. That's a corner I just added.
Yes. Which
a little late in the game, but definitely inspired by our pal the Ankh. This week when Dogen started digging a box out of his planter, I was like, "Why the temple? Are you so stupid all the time?" Anyway.
I'll be interested to see if that keeps coming up, because I feel like we've had a artifact heavy couple of episodes, and I don't know if that's based on the temple or just what Lost becomes, but we'll find out. Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award, we're gonna either give it to Lennon from the temple, or just like the temple extras who were probably picked up and thrown to the death by the black smoke, just all of them falling down. If you're in the temple, you fell down this week. Good riddance. John Locke Memorial Coming Back Award goes to Kimi, who makes good eggs. He could even get the poacher out if they want.
Sure.
If Saeed wants. Just, you know, good. Give him all the options. Guess I'm out of the book club. Joanna, we got a book this week.
Well, yeah, you know, they didn't flash to that dumb IKEA bookshelf in Dogen's office of plants and herbs and torture devices for nothing. He is reading a novel called Deep River by Shusaku Endo is the author, and it's, you know, story traces the journey of four Japanese tourists on a tour to India in 1984. Each has different purposes and expectations. Even though the tour is interrupted when the Prime Minister Indira Gandhi is assassinated by militant Sikhs, the tourists find their own spiritual discoveries on the banks of the Ganges River. So, you know, maybe a little Losty sort of. Yeah, that's all. That's all I got. That's all the book club.
Yeah. The Abs Eterno Award goes to Wet Saeed once again. He may be bad, but when he's wet, he's very good.
Yeah, still looking extremely confident in that tank top.
Oh, yeah. Confident tank top, glistening hair. He may be evil, but we love him.
Through the looking glass, Joanna, we've spotted Amir in this episode.
Yeah, as we have throughout the season, we've taken a moment to look at characters looking at themselves reflectively in the sideways. And for this, we get Saeed. Half of his face is reflected in the door to Nadia's home before she greets him for the first time. Is it significant that it's half of his face? Is this, like, more to your point, Dave, about, like...
Is he still claimed in this sideways?
I don't know.
Can he not be happy because he has to kill? Here's another question, because we're going to give him the Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award for saying, I'm sorry, I'm not that man anymore, because he ends up shooting people. But, Joanna, you were bringing up that, you know, it's maybe just when he threatens the kids, which means he could be, like, telling the truth here. I just thought it was, like, they were dumb enough to come for Saeed. Like, go beat up my shitty brother all you want. I'll protect his kids. But if you come and actually physically get me... Like,
well, I thought it was, like, I thought he would have, like, fought them right then and there or something like that. But when they said, like, should we go pick up the kids together? Like, that was, like, that seemed to be, like, we know where the kids are. So if you do something dumb here, the kids will die or something. I don't know. It felt connected to the kids, so.
Speaking of the kids, our Spot the Difference corner this week, picking out the differences between the sideways of the main universe. We kind of went over it, but Nadia has kids with Saeed's brother. Seems like a big difference. Everything else with Saeed seems vaguely the same. You're going to have to stay tuned to find out. It's time for the favoritest of moments. It's the jungle history moment.
I'm going to let Neil read it this week because he's very proud of what he's accomplished.
Yes, Neil hosted the Lighthouse Live Watch, which is where we polled you, our Slack Live Watchers, as to who needs to be kissing on the island this week. Neil, how did we do for the lighthouse? Lighthouse.
Yeah, I mean, I will admit to being extremely drunk on power during the crafting of this poll. As so many people know, I'm big on the high concept stuff, where it's like a person and like an idea or an inanimate object. This, I think, someone can check my math on this, might be the first one where all four options was only like one person and then some sort of concept. And so we had Jack and his janky truck. There was a lot of truck related discussion. Only 10.5% of people thought Jack should kiss his very dumb looking truck.
I love Jack's dumb truck.
The next one was Daddy Dogen and Everyone, which was the response to extremely hot Dogen in the Flash Sideways and how he should just be making out with everyone who joined us for the live watch. Only 18.2% of people on Twitter thought that was a great idea. Although, if everyone had stopped to hear the full explanation, I think this one would have performed a little bit better.
I gotta say, like, that actor is so good looking.
Mm-hmm.
Dogen sucks.
Right.
I hate that guy.
Speaking of people that deserve better. In second place, and this was extremely close at the top, in second place was Hurley and History Stuff with 34.9%. I didn't expect this to do as well because there was not enough room for me to write Hurley and Indiana Jones Stuff, which I think would have probably put it over the top. Just, you know, limited characters on the tweet. But number one, 36.4% winning in one of the closer matchups we've ever had for Kistery was Claire and her squirrel baby. Which I would also just like to mention that Twitter does not have a squirrel emoji. They have a chipmunk emoji. So it's technically Claire and her chipmunk baby. Either way, it's creepy and people wanted to see them kiss.
Interesting, listeners. I feel like this one says a lot more about Neil and you than it says about the episode of Lost. But if you want to get your opinions in for who needs to be kissing in Sundown, you can Carl your way over to Storm Podcast on Twitter. Why Carl? Because it's up right now! Boom. See? Lost reference. The Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award goes to Dogen, who says it is Sundown. Will you choose to stay or go? Saeed, who says, I'll stay, and then kills him.
No, bye. He said, okay. I hate everything about what happens to Saeed, except I really like Naveen's line reading here when he says, I'd like to stay.
Ah, I'd like to stay.
I like to stay. And then we already referenced his, like, you know, Ben's like,
we're no time left for me.
Yeah, no time left for me. And the creepy smile. Like, that's a good performance of a bad character turn. If I were Naveen, I'd be so mad at what they did to my character that I would be like, I'm going to phone it in. But he's like, no, I'll give you creep. I'll give you creepy crawlies up and down your spine. Anyway, just shout out to Naveen for making the best out of a bad thing. Yeah.
The Frank Lapidus, guess we're not going to Guam Actbreak Award, goes to Flock. Said, now, why'd you go and do that after pulling a knife out of his chest? Oh, things that can't die. Very scary. The official podcast check-in. We are going to skip again this week because it was just a video from Lost's Paley Fest, which, should you want to, is available on the YouTubes. But nothing that we need to necessarily help you with. That's so interesting.
I thought they did the Paley Fest after the show was all over. Because I've watched chunks of that, and I just never knew that that was... Because isn't Maggie Grace there?
I think they did the Paley Fest multiple times.
Oh, okay.
And this one is the pre-season 6 Paley Fest that had happened okay. Like months before. They just released the video on the official podcast feed.
Got it.
But yes, there is also a post-Lost Paley Fest. So I guess don't go for that on YouTube unless you're a Stormy. You're almost there, guys. So just a few more weeks to go.
Hang tight.
But if you are a Stormy, guess what? We have more coming up for you right after this.
Is there something like a mysterious soul clouding infection interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving
too
your
real
goal? Listen, all Saeed needed was to hang left at the temple food court and go see the temple therapist, who was probably better than Harper. He should have gone for BetterHelp. It will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. This is professional counseling done securely online. And listen, there's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. And guess what? If you're on an island of mystery somewhere, this service is available for clients worldwide.
Which is good, because you could log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. Like, let's say you're in a pit being held by some others. Good time to contact your counselor. You'll get a timely and thoughtful response before sundown, maybe. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
You can even learn a little bit more by reading testimonials that are posted daily on their website, like this one for a counselor named Patricia. This person says of Patricia, she has been a great listener so far and doing a good job in helping me organize my thoughts and work on my goals and mental health. You can visit BetterHelp.com/storm. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. And our Storm listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/storm.
Now is the time on this show where we like to thank our small council subscribers, our candidates, I think, as we're sort of internally calling them, at the $10 level or above. Starting with some a newcomer, we've got Corey Schneider, Chris Miracle, Delaine Mitchell, Amy Calhoun, Mark Tozier, Christina Sullivan, Saquon Gatling, Reed Larson, Liz Zellickson, Gabby B., Deanna Miller, Rebecca Addison, Michael Pine, Aaron Michael Augustini, Joe Measures, Bryce Quine, Ira Storm, Melissa Slaughter, Great on Toast, and Victoria McDuffie. Thank you so much.
And I would like to add to that thanks Marianne Donnelly, Jim Scott, Fiona Grimm, Aaron, Brian Rapp, Holly Hunt, Kelly Donahue, Bob Augustus, Stacey Axelrod, Mike McLaughlin, Madison Ray, Robert Bowles, Chuck Parquet, Cameron Graham, Tom Shapansky, Micknick, Jocelyn Land, Jeremiah Perez, Micah Wood, and Jane Phelps. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine human candidates: Brian Latino, Ben Block, Maggie Paulin, Matt Hayes, Tiffany Welker, Laura Kaminsky, Wendy Marshall, Joseph Johnston, Brenda Moran, Russell Brody, Carrie Labadia, Nell, Samantha Sherburn, Georgia Monroe Cook, Trey Menchaca, Rachel Warren, Dan Cleland, Christopher Woodside, Paul, and Michael Van Blarcom. I hope I got that right. Thank you all for being members of the Small Council.
And we're back for the storm. So we got a lot of things. We made some promises. We made some promises about things to talk about here. But also, I see in our emails, the last one just says Pat. So I know we have time, that we don't really have time to spare here. We got some very good
emails. Pat's email's pretty sharpish. But I can start there if you want.
Oh, no. I want to start with your question that you posed that was... Dogen actually trying to get Saeed killed in the situation?
I don't know, because like the follow-up question is like, was he being literal about don't let him say a word? Because he does get three words in before, like, would that have helped him? I don't think so. I feel like Smokey is now impervious. He's locked in Locke's body, but he's impervious until they pull out
cork.
The cork.
Mm-hmm. Cork is the storm horse. Toot toot.
So I don't think there's anything Saeed could have done.
Right, because we've already seen him get shot by
so was he trying to get him killed? What was this? It's just what weird was that he's like, name? Don't let him say anything to you. I don't know, man. And I there's a part of me that feels like the writers don't know. That's what I think. So
well, I mean, we know that Dogen still sort of wanted to get rid of Saeed, right?
Like, yeah, but would you give up your fancy knife to do it?
If that felt like it was the only way to finally get rid of Saeed. I mean, it totally backfired.
Here's a reason that Joanna, he might not have been trying to kill Saeed. Because he does like, who has the power to make not candidates candidates? Or candidates not candidates? So he can't kill Saeed because you can't kill candidates. That's why they had Jack give the poison pill. But he's got to know the smoke monster can't kill Saeed either, so why even send him out there at that point?
I don't know, man.
Unless, like, after you brand them, they're not a candidate anymore. Like, that was something I had trouble not saying in the calm, is it's interesting when Kate joins Locke's party at the end and he gives her that look, because in its mind, he's like, oh, it's interesting she's here. I don't really have to mind, though, because I could kill her whenever I want. Like, her name's crossed off.
So this gets echoed in Abaterno, where... it's the same dagger. You mm-hmm. shall know it by its funky hilt. And the man in black gives Alpert the dagger and says he can use it to kill Jacob. But I believe he says the same thing of, like, don't let him talk to you if you let him talk to you, blah, blah. And that's when Jacob, like, wins Richard over to his team. And then Dogan gives the dagger to Saeed and tells him that. And that's it for the dagger. That's the dagger's loop. Like, it's not the weapon. Well, I wanted to mention that, actually. I think the gun that Kate picks up as she walks out of the temple is the gun she used to kill the smoke monster in the finale. I think she just picked up the smoky murder weapon.
Not only final outfit, but the Chekhov's gun is entered. Yeah.
I mean, they take their time watching her pick up that gun. You know what I mean? And so then I was like, is that because it's the gun? And I think it might be. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can't think of another place that she's going to get a gun unless they have guns on the sub.
Right. So I could be wrong. Please email me, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Oh, that's the different show. Stormpodcast.
No, go ahead and email her there.
Stormpodcast.com. I'm wrong about that. But yeah, the dagger, the mirror with Abaterno, an episode I love, doesn't really work. Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
Well, also, if that were to, you know, connect logically, then wouldn't that have been the dagger that Ben stabbed Jacob with?
Right.
Wouldn't that have had to have been?
And it's not.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Too many
knives. By the way, the knife stub on Lostpedia is extensive.
But do they have an entry for every single one of John's knives in his case?
No, Locke's knives get their own stuff, actually.
Oh, knives.
Too many.
Even little baby Locke chosen knives. He was choosing knives really early on.
Too many MacGuffin weapons. Lost.
But this one was in a special box, and it was dug up from dirt, and you would expect it to be like... really special.
Right. But it was underneath some very special poison plants.
mean, those are the plants he uses to make his poison pills. Like, right? What the fuck?
He's anyway. Like, this is my weapons rack. It's plants on top of a knife.
Temple bullshit. That's like, isn't that like two Clue weapons in one? No, there isn't poison in Clue, but there should be.
I'm sure there's poison in some version of Clue. That seems like it'd just be too obvious.
If you keep digging in that box, you'll also find a spanner and a candlestick and some rope.
Does Saeed still have free will? Now that he's been claimed.
Well, but he does. So that's the thing. Like, when deciding whether or not Saeed is all good or all bad, both he and Claire, in the end, fight against their programming.
Claire makes it off the island. She lives through all this.
Yeah. But she makes the decision. Kate convinces her to go with her and go back to Aaron rather than, like, do something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stay, I guess. So she's, like, fighting the programming. She wants to be a good mom to Aaron. That's what she wants. And Saeed, you know, commits suicide. Fucking, I hate it. Fuck that submarine.
So it's like, yeah, they do. They still have free will. It's just now they have this extra sort of barrier. that they have to jump over in order to get their free will back.
They're thralls. They're thralls, and it's weird because thralls are usually much more obvious in all types of fiction that uses thralls.
Yeah, like, why can't they do, like, the eyes glazing over thing, you know, like they do in, you know, the Marvel stuff when, like,
yeah, or just let them walk without bending their knees. Something so we know they're being, like, puppeteered or, like,
or like
it's really not that hard.
What did they do in Supernatural when somebody was, like, possessed by a demon? Like, their pupils just went black?
Black,
or, like, the
yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. They've done some bad polygons on Lost. They could have done that same bad polygon TV stuff.
Give me old blown out pupils. I love that look. As a subtle possession look, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's weird to watch, like, normal-looking Saeed and them to constantly be telling us, like, oh, you know, he's infected. Whereas with Claire, it's like Claire's wig tells us that she's been through a rough time. At the very least, we understand that Claire is sort of walking a different path than she was before.
And, like, Smokey's definitely lying to Saeed about Nadia, right? He can't bring Nadia back from the dead. I mean, he has no plan. I mean, he wants to kill everyone, right? So, like, he's no plan to bring Nadia back.
He could appear as Nadia, but no, I don't think he could bring her back.
But he can't. He's locked into John's body, isn't he?
Oh, you're right. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe once he gets out, we never really know what power Smokey would have off the island.
Yeah, because Jacob's powers off the island are very confusing, so I'm sure Smokey's are equally as convoluted and nonsensical.
He's like, I'm going to resurrect everybody dead and make everybody living dead, so then they'll just be back. Wait. What's my plan here?
Well, yeah, and he can't really resurrect anybody, and if he does, they're coming back Wolfbrain, so it's not great. I'm glad it didn't happen. I'm glad they didn't go through with trying to resurrect Nadia. Because what they did to her in the main timeline was terrible as it is. You know, Jacob basically somewhat responsible for her being run over by a car and Saeed surviving. You know, add Nadia to the list
Jacob
of people who deserve better.
Nadia.
Maybe it's because Joanna Robinson, Nadia can't be in the church at the end. Who's going to be in the church at the end?
No, this is just another thing that's so stupid. Like, we've talked all season about, or all series, about how dumb it is that Shannon's in the church at the end, right? It's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, let's say you know that's your plan. Do they know at this point? It's kind of early in the season. I don't know. Do they know Maggie Grace is coming back?
This is before the break in episodes airing, so they haven't necessarily filmed the back end yet. And they already wrote her out of L.A. SpaceX because they couldn't get her. So at this point, no, I don't think they know they're going to get her back.
I think this just makes the whole Shannon thing feel worse because, like, if you know Shannon is your end game in the church, you don't have a Nadia episode in the same season, mm-hmm. right? Like, you just don't. Knowing that Nadia is in the Flash Sideways, but not in the church, is a big no for me. So, yeah.
Of course, another situation that could have been solved with a throuple where Shannon and Nadia with Saeed in the church would have worked
situation.
A lot better.
Like, that's a common solution to problems. Well, this is a throupling. Oh, yeah.
I think
it is for people who have seen Black Sails.
Yeah, but I just think that I think they should have just let Shannon and Boone be, you know, incest buds in the afterlife. That would have solved a lot of problems. They'll have Shannon and Boone, but, like, you know, don't bring Saeed into it.
Or and Shannon honestly, and the guy she met in Australia in The Flash Sideways, who was obviously worth staying for.
Yeah.
Because Boone couldn't
Shannon
bring her back.
Shannon and Vincent.
Aww.
Shannon and Vincent. Just brings in Vincent
no.
and pats him on the head.
Walt gets to have Vincent in his afterlife.
Everyone can have Vincent.
Shannon and Soggy
Saeed made up
adult
two
Walt.
Kids out of Stardust. Stardust
oh
children.
God.
More Stardust children.
This brings me, can I read a Stardust children email really quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. I usually don't like to be contrary to Lost theories. I'm generally on board. But we got a couple emails about this, and, like, the tone of at least one of them was like, you messed up. Apparently it was a common theory at the time that David was actually Kate and Jack's son because Kate and Jack have sex right before Kate goes to the island, etc., right?
Mm.
But here's the deal. If Stardust David were actually Kate's real life son that she has after she leaves the island and goes off with Sawyer and whatever, he would be integral to her afterlife. And he's not. He has nothing to do with Kate in the afterlife. She's locked into Claire and Aaron. So I reject this.
I had a lighthouse thought while we were doing the live watch that did not make the podcast, but it helped me click into all Dave's. What if Hurley creates David when he's like, I bet you'd be a good dad?
Oh, wow.
So Hurley, like, gives that to Jack, and that's what Jack needs to, like, find himself, is this little gift from, you know, Hurley. Because then he shows up in the same episode where Hurley could have, like, just manifested him.
I love the Stardust children. I'm a big fan. And listen, if Jacob can, like, resurrect a Japanese kid who died in a drunk driving accident that he didn't cause, then sure, why can't Hurley create a David out of Stardust, you know?
It's a weird move in this episode to give us the backstory for the child we saw in the Sideways last episode, you know? Like, someone during our live watch train Lighthouse was like, oh, there's Dogen's son, and I'm like, I don't think we know about the son yet. We've seen the baseball, but that's Sundown.
Yeah.
Which is, like, weird out-of-order stuff, which I gotta assume is just, like, an editing, you know? They're writing all these stories, and it all exists in their mind, and then they're like, oh, no, the temple doesn't work, we gotta get out.
Get out! Well, I mean, I just do think it's interesting that, so we see Jin in the freezer here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't find out how he got in the freezer till 4 episodes from now. Right.
If you guys are waiting for climactic Quan things, guess what? You have one more scene left, basically.
Keep waiting. All right. Can I hit these other emails real quick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of the Quans, this is from Brandon. He says, hey, guys. I'm trying to catch up before your last episode, but it's going to be close. So much like a previous email, I'm not sure if this has been covered to some degree. There is the lingering question about which Quan is the candidate. I have a headcanon theory that it is Jin and not Sun. I would love Sun to be a candidate because she rules, but it's not the way I've come around on it. I present 3 points of evidence to the court as follows. Number 1, she is a mother at the time we see Austin has been crossed out of the cave, but Quan has not. And we all know the very old school Jacob's take on becoming a mom. Fuck you, Jacob, you... sexist god. Okay. Number 2, she's not sucked back in time of the Ajira flight 316 with the others, all of whom are candidates. Number 3, this one takes some real Lost fan theory massaging, but in the submarine it's implied that the bomb was only able to kill them because of an action that Sawyer took, but even then the explosion didn't immediately kill any of the candidates except Saeed, who made a choice to sacrifice himself for others. What if in doing that he truly did protect the other candidates from the Men in Black's loophole bomb, but the one person that wasn't able to escape was Sun because she's not a candidate. Charlie Day Red String level. I even wonder if Sawyer's action would have actually led to their death, or was the Man in Black wrong about the level of causality needed for his loophole kill? Maybe it was Saeed's heroic suicide that allowed the bomb to explode, but the Man in Black couldn't cheat the candidate's death so easily. Either way, it still bums me out that the Quans die and the POC death sub. It's sad and beautiful that Jin refuses to leave her ever again, even at the cost of his life, but they never mention the daughter in that moment. And then there are only white candidates left. Sorry, I just remembered that Hurley is Latinx. Still was POC killing sub that got 3 out of 4. Thanks to the pod. Hopefully I'll be able to listen to the final episode right along with everyone else. Brandon Pod, pool technician at Pond. Oh, sorry. That's his real. I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry, Brandon. I need to read out your email signature. I apologize. I didn't get to the company, so we're good, I think.
No, I do see how, you know, when gentleman with the last name Pond, you may think maybe he's playing off of it.
I thought he was going to say, like, pool technician at the temple or something, but that's, it was a real company, yeah, so pull out. Anyway, yeah.
Temple does need a pool technician.
I like wasn't Ben a candidate at one point?
Yeah.
Isn't Linus on the lighthouse?
I think Linus is on, I think it's on the cave. I think we talked about him being there on the cave.
Okay, I can look this up really quickly. But anyway, he stayed with Sun. So if he's a candidate, she could still be a candidate. Though I liked that thinking.
That all goes along with me. Plus, I like the sort of shadow Dark Sun we've come up with in this rewatch in like my mind. That like, if things come down to like Sun or her baby, she will kill everyone. Like, I like that for her. She doesn't need to be a candidate for godhood for me to like her.
Mm-hmm.
Sun murdered Jai Li, and it all went from there.
Yes, Sun murdered Jai Li. You cannot convince me she did not kill the smooth boy.
Okay. Here's an email from Pat titled, "The Temple, It's Awesome."
Okay, Pat.
"Dear Island Templars, I love the temple in season 6. I just felt that I needed to continue my brand of loving things you all make fun of, like the excellent and mythic stone plug that regulates island energy, just like Superman's crystals in the Fortress of Solitude. I love that. I won't try to defend the temple, though. RIP temple defenses. Just know that the temple is loved. I do want to talk about Dogen with a G that's like the G in GIF. I always assumed that, just like us TV watchers, he didn't have a good idea what was going on, and so was making up those theories and running with it as if he'd figured it out. Said has been claimed by the Man in Black, just like Claire. Sure, Dogen, whatever. Claire has been assassinating others like a vengeful jungle phantom. It probably soothes the pride of the others to think of her as some kind of supernatural force, a claimed agent of the smoke monster, rather than just admit that Claire is conventionally dangerous. Similarly, oh, this is where I got... I stole my Scientology joke from Pat. Similarly, I was never impressed by Dogen's quasi-scientific Scientology E-meter test of Saeed. Dogen probably once hooked himself up with electrodes, noted the dial metrics, and thought, this is probably baseline non-agent of evil numbers. After submerging Saeed in the ominously dark water, in my headcanon, Dogen just figured he better check out how Saeed measured on the dials of this meaningless test, and since the readings were different, Saeed was evil in Dogen's faulty assessment."
Oh no, God, what if it's even sadder than that? What if he thinks he's evil? And so his baseline Aww. Reading, if you read like Dogen, then he thinks you've been claimed.
Look, none of these others really know what's going on. This has probably been the first time and only time Jacob has been killed, and the first time the Man in Black has truly manifested like this. Although there must have been similar attempts, because the others, as well as Ilana, sure do have opinions on the matter. It's uncharted territory, and Dogen is likely making stuff up on the fly, like one does when one is in charge of a bunch of cultist hippies. Anyway, I love the temple earnestly, but I also love your recaps busting on the temple. You heathens! I say that with love. Best wishes, Pat. So, a mixed temple. I mean, basically, Pat was like, I love the temple. It's full of bullshit.
Sometimes you just need a big scoop of bullshit. I'm into that. There are definitely shows where I'm like, yeah, bring that on. It isn't this particular show, but I could respect that opinion. I don't know if there's anything that makes me feel better about that, though. Except maybe that Dogen tested himself and deem himself not worthy. It's such a weird confluence of things from a show that was so good at planting mysteries they didn't know solutions to. I just assumed they'd be better planting mysteries for things they did know solutions to, but apparently it's not. Television's hard.
I wonder if there was any sort of like internal like artistic fissure in the final season. It almost feels like a split personality the final season, and that's like on island versus flash side. There's like the character stuff, and then there's the mystery stuff, and it just doesn't feel like, you know, Cuse and Lindelof ever since Cuse hopped on in season 2, like, seemed like those things were like shaking hands, and here it feels like they're two roads diverged in a yellow wood, basically. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know.
Or at the very least, the show knows what the sideways are, and therefore, rightfully, as we've learned on a rewatch, is more interested in it. But like, yeah, the island stuff—it you had it right when you were talking about the scales being too binary. That's they curse themselves with a one white and one black, and then lean into it with across the sea, and then it just makes a whole bunch of the rest of the season either confusing or less important. Which is just at counter positions to you know what it was. Yeah. I remember when this episode aired being much more interested in that question I asked in the column, where it's like, do they lose? Like, is that, you know, like, is the sideways what happens after the smoke monster gets out? Like, because there's Nadia, and that just like he promised. which I still think would have been an interesting way to end the series. I like how the series ends, but it's the island stuff is just not only far away from the Flash sideways, but far away from where the characters were when we left them at the end of season 5. Except maybe Sawyer. Sawyer had Juliet to bridge him over. Yeah,
and we haven't even gotten to Desmond down a well yet.
Desmond down a well. Everyone just sitting around Locke's bummer camp of...
Not yeah. like Tina Fey.
I mean,
not Tina Fey. Oh my god.
I think I wonder if it's a combination of a bunch of things, and that's usually the right answer when it comes to what went wrong with a large production like this. But you know, the pressure, I guess, to have answers to some of the mysteries seems to have gotten away from them a little bit.
Mm.
You know, because in some ways, they did fun little things, like, you know, like Shannon's inhaler in the last episode.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun one.
Yeah.
But in other ways, they seem to, like, double down on, like, we need...
There's a magic knife! Maybe.
Right, like, we need magical shit with ancient iconography attached to it, and, you know, we need to sort of explain what's going on with Jacob and the Man in Black when... I mean, honestly, they could have probably found other ways to do it. I mean, granted, we have, you know, a decade worth of hindsight at this point, so.
Oh, okay, we really need to explain the numbers. Okay, well, let's put them on a cave. I don't feel, okay, how about in a weird lighthouse as well? Yeah. Yes?
How about someone just eventually says, Jacob just has a thing for numbers.
Fuck. I do love this show, and I love a lot in the final season, but this episode isn't one of them, and a lot of, you know, but
the sideways is great. I love the mirror to season 1 where we're just dealing with one person's, you know, little side story. When they start linking, then it's a whole new exciting thing. But at least like this part, I'm mostly tuning in for the sideways, and definitely next week I'm tuning in mostly for the sideways because the island gets all
funny. I don't remember what happens next week on the island, but sideways
because the sideways is so good.
It's Alex, baby. Alex is back.
I think it's a lot of Alana is like tells Ben to dig his own grave.
Oh, no. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to fight you next week. I like that. This is the only use of Alana that I like. And then she's dead. So get it in while it works.
Then, like other season 6 problems, they blow her up. All right. Neil, where are we going next week?
Well, as we were just talking, we're going to Dr. Linus, which is... at least 50% a great Ben episode. We get some Arst. He's back. We get some Alex. We get Ben as a teacher. I'm sure we'll talk about all the various subjects in school that we would be not qualified to teach once again. But yeah, good sideways stuff. And like Joanna, honestly, I watched this episode a couple of weeks ago and don't entirely remember what happens on the island.
That's how important the island things are.
No, but I remember. Alana, Ben has like a real good breakdown. It's a good Michael Emerson shit.
Yeah.
No one will have me sort of shit. It's good. We'll talk about
it. I killed God and now I'm sad.
Who knew that would have consequences? all right. Until then, where can people find more of your work around the internet? Let's talk to Joanna Robinson first.
Oh, hi. I write for a website called vanityfair.com. I also do a couple podcasts for them. One is called Little Gold Men, where this week we talked about All About Eve with our old co-host Mike Hogan came back. It was healing and lovely to have him on the podcast. Also, we launched season 1, episode 1 of Still Watching Loki after a premiere preview podcast last week. We are in the thick of it now. Someone named Tom Hiddleston is on the podcast this week. I don't know if you heard of him, but he's there. A fly is also there. and we'll talk about all of that over on Still Watching. And then you can catch me on Twitter doing nonsense at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at the filmschoolrejects.com website and on Twitter at rejects and at one perfect shot. That's a fun one that I do. Don't forget that you can always catch me in our Slack now that I'm officially moved and mostly done packing. Going to be doing some more Slack nonsense. Just go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Join up. It'll be great.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. If you haven't tried that podcast, but you do like me, this might be a good week because David Ehrlich had to go missing. So I get to talk about Flight of the Navigator with Katie Rich and Matt Patches, and they let me go ham on The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, where I'm pretty sure if those people were still alive, I say things that could be considered legal slander. So check that out. Don't tell your lawyer friends. And I will also be here every week until the end. That's actually the end of the episode of Lost, telling you to not fall down.